Hello, welcome to the Shut Your Face podcast with your host, me, Bree. I'm super excited you guys are here. Thank you so much for listening to this shit show. This is the second season, and I couldn't be more thankful for all of our guests that took the time to talk to me. It's so freaking cool. Go check us out on Patreon for early access and exclusive content. And then lastly, thank you so much to our sponsors, Bemar Media and Leather and Lights. I kind of happen to know them just a little bit. They're pretty cool. Anyways, let's get on into it, shall we?
Hello.
Hi, is this Josie?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, it's Brianna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
You bet.
Oh, wow. You're a Cat Williams fan, too, aren't you?
Oh, God, I love Cat Williams.
I love Cat Williams.
Yes. The Friday movies.
He's hilarious.
All things Cat Williams.
Yeah, he's hilarious. He's hilarious. They did. I don't know if you listen to Joe Rogan or not, but he brought up how he was in Phoenix. Recently, Cat Williams was, and somebody like booed America, and he just kind of went A-town on them. Like, it was hilarious. The whole clip's hilarious if you haven't seen it yet.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I haven't stopped to go look at it. There was he had a concert in Dallas last year, but it was like in the ghetto in Dallas. And my husband's like, no. I'm like, but he's like, no. He's like, first off, you're allergic to marijuana, so that's not going to work out real well. He's like, in the ghetto in Dallas. I'm like, good. I mean, I'll take my inhaler. It'll be okay.
So hold on. How did you find out you were allergic to weed? That's crazy.
So when I tried it in high school, like all kids do, I had an asthma attack. And it's because of the smoke, like, I've never tried anything else for, you know, out of fear. But, like, if I'm, like, at a rodeo and I pass somebody that's part of their pregame routine, I'll have an asthma attack. So
that kind
of
sucks.
It's lots of fun.
Yeah.
The good news is I know who not to park next to most of the time.
Well, yeah, no, and then, I mean, just aside from that, like, this is 2025. Like, you know, seriously, the benefits of smoking weed for some things are incredibly insane. I'm surprised how, of course, the medical industry has a pushback on it. But, so you can't take you can't eat the gummies or anything like that.
I haven't tried. I haven't tried. I'm like terrified of, you know, the reaction. I really think it's mostly just like the direct smoke because I can smell it and it doesn't bother me. It's when I'm like last year at a rodeo, I was walking and it was in Oklahoma. Somebody was vaping it and they like turned around and blew it straight at me and it like right in my face. And I'm like immediately my throat started swelling and my chest started swelling and I'm like, don't have my inhaler. So I turn around, can't talk. I'm yelling at my husband. He's like, these farmers can't figure out what's going on because I'm just going.
That is scary, like, though. I could imagine.
Yeah, it's not fun not being able to breathe. So that's like the only reason I don't think it should be like legalized like cigarettes because I'm like, you know, there's some of us out there that, you know, it could potentially kill us. So now people will know how to kill me.
Well, no, we don't want that. We don't want that. Let me just go ahead and dive on into this. You own Streak and Beat Art, and these are all your original pieces. I know everybody has seen it at least once, which is magnificent work. How did you come to this part of your life? Did you always know that you were going to run an art gallery of your own stuff? Or?
No, this is 100% purely a God thing. So I used to train barrel fraternity horses. Like, I grew up, that's all I wanted to do. I wanted to be a barrel horse trainer, and that's what I did for the better part of my adult life until this took off, was, you know, had a barn full of barrel fraternity horses and, you know, lived month to month, but like, as people do, whenever you're trying to be a successful horse trainer. Mm-hmm. And so kind of turned to painting. My family are all super artistic, but most of them are musicians, though. And I have always drawn and sketched, and I kind of turned to painting as a release and started posting my stuff on Facebook, and you know, like the first painting I sold, I actually just bought back. Girl gave me $50 for it, and I thought that's awesome. And then, you know, it just kept growing and it kept growing and it kept growing. And then, like, with the help of some different people, they you know, pushed it. And like the first big like opportunity was good friends with Gail and Casey Jones. Casey's the steer wrestler and Gail runs Barrels, and they also manage the Rodeo Vegas party during the NFR. And Gail called me and said, hey, you want to do a poster for us? Sure. You know, I didn't even know how much to charge. Went and talked to Buck Taylor about it at the stock show. Buck was great. Like, there's not a better of the cowboy artists. Like, he is definitely the one that, like, gives the most genuine advice and is the most approachable. And he took the time to go through my portfolio and talk to me about what to charge and how to do it. And then it just kept growing. Like, and it just keeps growing. It's insane. But no, I never thought it was good enough. So,
well, I can imagine kind of the, like, being in a lost forest of how to navigate this, because it is not a lot of people. One, not a lot of people do it. And then two, it's like not a lot of people, you don't see this a lot in the Western industry. You don't see a lot of people. You are more so now because it's become more popular now. But before, mm-hmm. like, you didn't hear of people that did art like you, like this. And it's so different. It's just.
Thank you.
It's just different.
That's been my favorite thing. Thank you. Now, I think there is, like, definitely a place for it. And because everybody has different tastes. And, like, I love traditional
right.
art, too. You know, I have, there's another lady that sponsors a lot of the cowhorse stuff, Shannon Lawler. I've traded pieces with her. I have one of her prints called Drops of Jupiter. And she has one that I did just fooling around watching horses at the warm-up pen. Last year at Snaffle Bit, and Stephen Drew, that does a bunch of the cutting horses, he's done hashtags, he did the Western Bloodstock horse that's on the cover of all their stuff. Same thing, like, that, you know, they do more of the photorealism, oils and acrylics, and I love their work. And I think there's just so many of us that can, like, learn from each other. And, you know, there's just art for everybody. I mean, like, the only problem there is in art is when you see people who are knocking others off, literally, like, because everybody's inspired by everyone, whether it's your style or colors or different things. But every now and then there'll be an artist that'll pop up that'll start knocking people off, and, you know, they usually don't hurt anyone, and finally they find their own niche and go on their own way, and you don't see them anymore. But, yeah. You know, that's really, it's grown so much, and there are a lot of abstract Western artists out there. Like, one of my favorites is a man I've never met him, but his name's Rocky Hawkins, and I follow his stuff on Instagram. And I'm gonna have one of his originals someday. He makes the coolest kind of Native American inspired abstract art. It's insane. It's super impressionist. But those people just don't get pushed by the cowboy artists like they should. And not just myself, but a lot of them. And so, you know, you don't hear as much about it in the mainstream. So people like me have to put ourselves out there and, you know, take the criticism, which we do get at the trade shows, especially,
yeah.
to get it out there, to find the people that, you know, are looking for something different.
Yeah. You know what? You are right. You just touched on something. It's crazy to me how people, I mean, yes, you can appreciate people's opinions, but to me, art doesn't have an opinion. It's just like, to me, a mature person can appreciate art no matter what kind of is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I just think it's odd to even criticize somebody's different way of doing stuff. Just,
you'd be amazed at some of the, especially the cutting, some of the comments. Last year was the best, my favorite comment I think I've heard yet. There was this lady that walked by my booth, and it's the week before the celebrity cutting gets, you'll get all kinds in there. And this gal walks by my booth, I'm sitting there, and she goes, that girl must do a lot of drugs.
What?
With me sitting there. I looked over at her. I said, I've never done any in my life. Wouldn't you be scared if I did?
Like, you should have said, yeah, I did. It was good.
I just looked at her like, are you? No, because I think it does scare people that, like, I come up with this stuff. I don't use photo references unless I'm doing a commission. Somebody wants me to turn into my art. Very seldom.
Oh, wow.
Occasionally I'll use a photo. Like, if I see, like, Phil Doyle, the California rodeo photographer, did a really cool mark out photo, and I messaged him, and I was like, can I please reference that in a painting, and I will give you a print of it, or sell you the original for much, much less than I'm going to sell it to anyone else. And he was like, oh, yeah, no. And as long as you ask, most of the photographers are pretty good. And I'm very careful to only paint commissions off of photos that people own. Like, I will not paint a proof out of respect for the photographers because, you know, I've had people send me proofs and be like, hey, can you paint that for me? No, not till you buy it from the photographer.
Yeah.
Like, that's not right. And so, I've done that. But for the most part, what I paint is what I see in the show pen or in the practice pen or, you know, might be the light in the morning between somebody's horse that's schooling or, you know, might be a lyric from a song I hear. But yeah, most everything's done out of my really, really, really creative imagination.
I'm glad you just said that about, like, respecting copyright with not just art, but photographers, graphic art, all, like, there's
so many. Absolutely.
People don't, I'm mind blown because I was always taught that it was just like, that's just what you do. Like me, like we do embroidery and stuff like that. And people mm-hmm. will ask me, can you do this logo? And I'll have to be like, no, you know, if you don't own it, we can't do it. Or they'll send me something that's blatantly copyright somebody else's.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, we can't do that. And it surprises me how the common person really doesn't even think about it. They don't, they just don't think about it.
Yeah, but then some of them are just spiteful. Like I had a girl that,
yeah.
I had one idea I haven't done prints of, belongs to a couple in Paso Robles, California now, and this gal is from Australia. She sends me a picture that she had probably taken a low-res file off the internet, off like maybe off my webpage, and had it printed and was giving it away as an award. And I told her, I said, first off, that print or that painting is, I didn't do any prints of it. That's an original. So she had to have just jacked the file off Facebook or my website. And I said, you do not have permission to have printed that. You did not buy it from me. You need to destroy it. And I kid you not, this chick says back to me, it costs entirely too much to have made, cheers, and then blocks me.
Oh, my.
I was just like, wow. I mean, you know. What are you going to do? It's a low-res photo, and there are actually no copyright laws overseas, which is why I won't send – I would love to do wild rags, but I cannot find anyone who prints them in the U.S. They all outsource them. I don't care what they tell you. And I'm not sending my low-res or my high-res files to China because there's no copyrights. They can copy anything they want. And
yeah, and you know
no
what's
reason.
Funny about that? It's easier to get a patent in China than it is in the United States.
Of course it is.
Which is crazy, which is totally weird. But, no, I mean, like, you know, it's one thing if you don't know and you correct it. Like, I've had people reach out to me. Like, I've had, you know, a company actually reach out to me and say, hey, this is ours. And I go, my bad. Nope, not a problem. You know, because if you don't know, you don't know. No average person has time to, like, research all of this. But, like, to be told, hey, this is not yours, please fix it, and for them to just... Like, for her to do that to you is like, what?
It's insane. I, same way with tattoos. I have had a couple people who have paid me for pieces to have tattoos done, and I actually have one of my own now on my arm. But I've had gals call me or people send me pictures where they've taken one of my pieces and got it tattooed on themselves. And I'm like, you didn't pay for that. And that applies to all artists. Like, you pay for the artwork. You can walk into the tattoo shop and get any stock photo you want, and that's fine. They're using royalty-free stock photos. But, you know, my original piece on your arm should cost you, and any artist's original piece on your arm should cost you. I mean, it's not okay to do that. And one girl didn't think about it, and she apologized profusely, and then Venmo'd me the fee that I'd charge to just use one of the images. She didn't actually buy the piece. It was already sold. But and then another one was just like, yeah, well, you put it on the internet, so tough shit. And I was like, okay, then. I mean, what am I going to do at this point? But, you know, stand there over while they laser it off, not really, but it's not okay. But I guess if people can live with themselves doing that, then, you know, that's on them.
Yeah, no, I get it. I understand just from the graphics perspective of it. We've had to deal with it. And the it's like, the, you know, photographer's perspective too. You know, if people took the time to actually, like, looked up copyright laws and stuff like that, they would be a little more educated in these situations. But like you said, people just don't do it. They just don't care.
No, I know they don't. I think they're just like, what are you going to do about it? And it's really sad that people are that way. But, you know, there's not an instance out there where I don't double check. I've checked with every photographer that I was able to get a hold of on an image, any image that I'd have to do that's, you know, like filled oil steel, or I haven't done any of B. Silva's, but I've done a few of Carolyn Symancyk's, and, you know, those are all paid for images that the people can do with really whatever they want, but it's still out of respect to double check on those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I wanted to ask you, you did kind of mention a little bit earlier, you wanted to train barrel horses. You were training them. That's what you were doing. Is that your background in the horse industry? Did you always grow up around horses, or did you just...
I was raised on my granddad's cow-calf operation, and I wasn't raised like the junior rodeo diehard barrel racer parents. I had a single mom. I rode whatever she could get me on, and just kind of came up. I think I started junior rodeoing when I was like 15. I didn't, you know, do the little kid, go hard, you know, do every event, have four horses kind of deal that you see now, especially down here in East Texas. But I grew up, but I loved every discipline. Like, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but barrel racing is just what mom did. And I love it. Like, I still do. I have two good horses that I raised that I won the West Monroe Rodeo, Pro Rodeo here about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and did the Steve Kenyon podcast and got to talk about Art on that. And I still love it, but I've always loved the cow horse, and that's kind of my focus kind of shifted to that whenever this Art took off. And that industry and the cutters have been such a huge supporter of what I do. I've got bronzes now that are given away at the Snaffle Bit as awards to the riders. Just about every top 25 rider in the NRCHA has at least one of my pieces or prints. So, like, they all support each other. Same way with cutting. Like, I've got, you know, a lot of cutting horse people that have some of my stuff, and they're very supportive. So I don't cut, but I do stuff with their youth foundation, with Rion Story back. And the NCHA is incredibly generous in how they treat their sponsors. Like when the first time I did the live painting, they paid me, but then they also turned around and gave me commercial time during the herd settles and an appreciation plaque and other just thank you for being here, which, you know, if you're an association and you've got people donating, because time is money. I mean, it's not just you know, the sponsors that throw $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 at them. It's the people who actually will take the time to, you know, either talk to the kids or do stuff for charity. So, you know, for them to reciprocate like they do, like and they're very quick to send people in my direction. So I'm always like down for, especially like with the kids stuff, because I'm a mom myself, just trying to give back to the youth deal to, you know, help our kids feel special and seen.
Well, you want to raise them right. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. I always hear at the Fort Worth, like the police officers always talk about how they love working the horse shows, because the horse kids and the stock show kids are just, they're the best, because, you know, of course they see the worst of the worst working, you know, in the city. So it's like they get to come and be around, you know, ag kids, and ag kids are the best. Like there's no way around it.
Well, yeah, I'll have to send you a link to the episode we did with this lady who literally does horse training like in the city of Philadelphia. And she's got this one kid who, you know, you go home to like literally gunshots and violence and all types of stuff, and your only saving grace is to go to this person's barn where he can be around horses and stuff. It's really, really great. It's really cool.
Oh yeah, that would
doing.
Be cool. Yeah, because
she's literally doing what you're talking about, like giving them a space to be that type of kid. Because you are right, it's a lot different, but
yeah.
Because it could be worse, like they say. You know, you could be doing drugs instead of horses, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes I wonder if drugs aren't cheaper, but, you know, definitely counterproductive.
That's what Trisha said.
It is. I tell everybody my midlife crisis was turning the cow horse for barrel racing, and it probably would have been cheaper to, you know, go get some plastic surgery in a Corvette. Like, it's just like, but it's addicting.
Right, because you got to feed them.
Oh, yeah. You got to feed them, and the entry fees and the vet bills and the all the things. I mean, I have, like, the best vets in the world at Mid-South Equine, but, you know, they get a lot of money out of all of us to keep our horses going, but.
Now, do you, I know that you just kind of got back from the Celebration of Champions. You were set up there and doing all, you know, you got your booth and stuff that you do. Do you have time, excuse me, do you have time to actually show, or are you planning on showing any? Because your husband does
showed.
Training.
Yeah, we both still do. I still have an open card because I have a couple of really good clients that I'll, you know, always take courses for. And, no, I did. I showed in the limited open bridal prelims the other day and had a couple of penalty points going down the fence that cost me making the finals, but my mare was really good. And then I showed the day before yesterday in the Level 1 Derby herd work, and I go back and show Friday in the rein work portion of the Level 1 Derby, and then also go down the fence next Wednesday in the final part of the Level 1 Derby, which is the Level 1 is for, like, your entry-level trainers that haven't won over, gosh, I believe it's 25,000, might be 50, but a certain amount of money. I guess I should probably know that, but I don't pay attention to it. I'm not near it yet. But anyway, it's an entry level, basically like a side pot for trainers that are coming in to get their feet wet and get in the show pen and have a chance to win money without having to compete against the top 25 guys if they don't want to. But you can actually enter all the way up as well as enter that class.
Well, that's really cool that they allow that because
it's
intimidating. The whole reined cow ordeal is crazy because you literally have to be good at, like, all three major disciplines.
Mm-hmm. And you do. There's no getting by. Like, they say they used to, you know, if you were really great down the fence and in the herd, you could get by in the reining or vice versa. But, you know, now these guys are good at all of it. And then you got ones that come over to the cutting, like Chris Dawson and Clayton Edsel this year, both of them making the intermediate finals at the cutting. And it is completely different to ride a horse in the herd work of the cutting versus to ride an actual cutting horse. Like, we do everything different because we still have so much forward motion in our cow horses that they take out of them in the cutting horses. So for those guys to, like, cross disciplines and be successful is really cool because they're still active open riders in both.
I always thought that was so admirable. It's cool to be able to see the way that reined cow horse just does collaborate all of that together. Because if you stop and step back and look at just cutting in itself, reining in itself, it's like those horses are so fine-tuned to do what they just that one discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what the reined cow horse has to deal with. Like,
it's
and the
unreal.
Rider.
It's unreal. And you know, the good ones, like my bay mare, she knows, she's so smart that she knows by how you're scolding her the day before what she's going to be doing that day. Like, if she walks into the herd, she puts her head down and gets really quiet. If she's going to rein, you can tell she's like, oh, crap, there's no cow involved. And then going down the fence, like, if I go trotting in there and she feels me set up straight and call for my cow, you can just feel her swell because that's her favorite. She like, you can tell how excited she gets to go down the fence. And these horses, they're just so smart that the great ones, they learn and they know by, you know, how you're schooling them, what they're fixing to go do. And it's really neat. It's a really neat thing to see and experience.
Yeah, I always kind of thought you can tell how a person rides their horse by how much credit they give them for their intelligence. Because, you know, horses are a lot smarter than people give them credit for. I also wanted to ask you what, kind of switching back to art really quick, what piece took you the longest? Cause you know, you have some artists who, sit down and they'll start it. They won't get up until they finish. And then you have some artists that have to kind of sit and go back and forth and back and forth and come back and forth to stuff. What's one of the pieces that took you the longest or, like collaborations that you liked the most?
Painting wise, I would say the piece that's taken me the longest is one that I have prints of on my website, and it actually went to Canada. It's called Paint the Town Red after the Doja Cat song because I love all music. But it, there's prints of it on the website, and it had a lot of detail in it. I really wanted to like abstractly capture the cows behind the horse, and you can see them if you're really looking. And that's one of the things I try to do with my art is make people stop and think and wonder at it, you know, whether they like it or not. If it, I always tell everybody, whether you take it home and hang it on your wall or not, if it makes you stop and think, I've done my job. And that piece, of course, the horse is glaringly obvious, but then when you really look at the background, you start seeing the turnback riders, you start seeing the cows if you stand there and stare at it long enough. And not everybody does. Not everybody wants to spend that time looking at something. But the people that do, it's fun to watch their faces while they're trying to work out what they're seeing inside of it.
That is kind of cool that you just said that. So what do you have an expectation? Like when you get done with a painting, do you kind of have a, an expectation of how you want the viewer to see this? Or do you just appreciate any perspective that you get from your art?
I mean, I'll honestly take any perspective because it made them feel something. And like, that's the whole thing. Like, you know, obviously it's great being self-employed, getting to set my own hours and make money and all of the freedom you have with that. But the coolest part is when it makes people feel something. I had one that hung at my booth forever. It was called Push Comes to Shove, and it was a white horse and a black horse with their heads together. Black horse had his ears back, white horse had his ears forward, and they're kind of pushing on each other's foreheads. And it hung in my booth for probably a year before it sold, and it was so fun to hear people's different interpretations. And some would talk to me about it, some would just stop and talk to their friends about it, never even address me. But just to hear what they had to say and what they were feeling and seeing in it was really cool, because honestly, there's no wrong answer to any of that, because, you know, it's how it makes people feel. And, you know, if it makes you feel a certain way, then that's how it's supposed to make you feel. And it's really, so, you know, anybody's interpretation is definitely interesting to listen to. And I like it. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I think some people don't realize, or maybe they haven't seen a piece that's made them feel anything yet, how emotional art can actually be. If it catches mm-hmm. you at the right time and you're feeling something and you see something, it can just, like, I don't know if you're on TikTok or not, but there was this, the little black devil fish. Did you see the TikTok about that? How it, mm-hmm. like, apparently this fish is super small and it only lives down at sea level, but it swam all the way up to the top or whatever. And it was literally making people just cry all over TikTok. It was so many videos about it, and mainly women, they were crying over this fish because they felt it represented, you know, women in general. And, you know, I don't know. It was just crazy to hear some of the emotions and the perspectives that, you know, I'm just swinging back to what you're saying, you know. Sometimes people can walk by this stuff and go, oh, okay, yeah, whatever, that's just art. But then some people can walk by and look at it and go, and it makes them feel like what you're talking about. It'll make them feel this emotion they never saw coming. And that's cool that that makes you feel fulfilled in what you're doing and why you're doing it.
100%. It's really neat. My favorite thing is to watch spouses do it for each other. It was really cool. It was a few years ago, and it was very neat for my daughter to experience, too. Cowhorse trainer Lee Deacon had commissioned a small piece of his wife Ashley's favorite horse. And then what we did was I did a small piece, then I took it to the printers, and we scanned it and blew it up and printed it on metal. And so he bought both the small piece and the big metal print for their house. But my daughter went with me to take it on Ashley's birthday, and we get to their house, and he's got her, like, locked away in the back room, and he's so excited. And so he has Harper, my little girl, stand in their living room. And of course, they all know her really well because she's around the shows, and everybody really looks after everybody's kids at those cowhorse shows. And so Harper's standing in the living room holding this metal print, and he brings her out blindfolded, and she's just like, what are you doing? Like, are you kidding me? And he was as excited to give it as she was to get it. And for my daughter to get to see that kind of kindness towards each other, I mean, which her daddy and I get along great, but like to see others and to see, you know, him put that much thought into making her happy for her birthday, you know, that was really cool for her to get to experience that too, because I think he was excited. And, you know, I've had that happen a couple of different times where I got to be like a part of the actual giving it to them process. And, you know, just watching people be happy is just, that's very fulfilling. It's very much, you know, it makes you feel like you have a purpose in life other than just to draw stuff that people hang on their wall.
Exactly. Well, I can imagine that probably does. I mean, how sweet was that?
It was really sweet. It was very cool.
So let me ask you this. Obviously you probably only commission a certain amount for people that, you know, let's say somebody does want to do a gift for somebody special and they'll send you a picture for you to draw. Do you have certain like stipulations as far as when you do commission a piece and somebody wants you to do something for them, or do you only strictly leave it to prints that you like your original stuff?
No, I do. If it's something that doesn't inspire me, a lot of times I'll pass it on to someone I think that would enjoy it. A lot of us pass stuff back and forth to each other. Especially like I've been doing a lot of charcoal and pencil drawings just for myself here lately. And I started doing, I love pinup art, and so I started doing some of that, but they're mostly charcoal, and then I'll put, like, pops of turquoise or, like, one color in there. So they're more photorealism than I normally do, and people have been kind of commissioning stuff like that, but I don't want to do those, so I pass them off to my fellow graphite and charcoal artists that are amazingly talented, and, you know, and then they send stuff like people, when someone wants something abstract, they'll, you know, return the favor and send it back to me. And, but, you know, no, there's not really any guideline for it. It's just whether or not it is something that's inspiring and that I think can be turned into one of my pieces. I mean, I did one time for a guy that was of his girlfriend. The picture he sent me was pretty goth. And then whenever I did it, it was like very zombie bride. And I sent it to him, and he's like, I'll pay you for that, but I'm probably not going to give it to her. And I was like, you know what? You don't even have to pay me for it because I don't like it either. And it just didn't translate to my style very well.
Yeah.
And he went and found someone who does something that's a little more photorealistic, and it turned out beautifully. And, you know, and he apologized to me and still tried to pay me. He's a great customer and actually has several of my pieces. And I was like, no, sir, I don't want anybody to ever pay for something that they don't want. So,
right.
I was like, it's fine. And I ended up just, I think, painting over it because I didn't even want to put it out there either because it was all right, but I don't do goth art. And it was a little bit goth.
I love that. See, a lot of people don't understand. To me, I understand the concept that you just have different styles. People have different styles. It's not less, more, better, great, crappy. It's just different styles, and you can appreciate it. So even if it's not your style, it doesn't mean it's bad. And a lot of people don't understand that concept.
It's the same with music, though. Like, I saw someone the other day, they were talking about this new Western art deal, and somebody got on there and commented, we'll sign up when you kick Jelly Roll and all those other fools out of country music, you know, just being a jerk. And, you know, do I think Beyonce deserved Western Album of the Year or Country Album of the Year at the Grammys? No. But at the same token, I happen to love Jelly Roll. I happen to love Post Malone, and I happen to have every song on Post Malone's new country album downloaded on my phone.
I love Posty.
Oh, Posty is so good. But like the small-mindedness is very much rampant, especially in among some of the Western art collectors. And I had one stand there one day, and I was kind of probably not very nice to him, but I had about enough of listening to him because he kept coming back and talking to me and telling me he had all these originals from this one Western artist. And I was like, okay. And he's like, I'm sorry, I like your art, but it just won't fit in my house because, you know, we're just more traditional. And I just finally looked at him and went, I'm sorry. He was like,
okay.
You could tell he didn't know what to think. Well, then he ended up buying one of my bronzes. You know, you could tell he was just like, did she just say that? And I'm like, you know, it's okay if you don't want to hang my art, but you don't have to stand here for an hour and tell me, well, I like your stuff, but, like, it's all okay.
Like he was trying to convince you not to.
I don't know what he was doing. He's a really nice man, but I couldn't take it anymore. I was just like, you know, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You know, when you buy from people like myself, 99% of the time you're getting pure imagination and something that unless someone else sees it, or it's pure accident, it's not going to be duplicated. And,
right.
you know, so it's very, very original. And, you know, it's not always, not everybody can do that. It's like those quick draw challenges that they always advertise. I hate them because to me, a quick draw challenge, you should be able, it should be like doing something straight out of your brain. And a lot of them, you see them just recreating some picture. And like, not take cake with him from anybody who can do that, because I personally stink at it, because my ADD won't let me sit there that long. But I'm just like, you know, to me, a quick draw challenge is you've got 30 minutes to do something straight out of your brain. And I know so many artists that agree with me and could do it, and they won't enter them because they don't want to go up against people that are painting a beautiful photo from somewhere.
Yeah, that should be, I don't think that should be a measure of success, I guess, or, I mean.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that would make, yeah.
I just, to me, art's such a feeling, but that's just me. Not everybody has weird feels like some of us do. So.
No, I love this. I am so about this right now, because actually I wanted to go into the pinup deal. So I love, I don't know if you are familiar with like old warplanes
mm-hmm.
and the
pinup. Yes, the bomb girls.
Yeah. So I have that on my arm. I have a tattoo sleeve on my arm. And I actually, the first piece that I saw that you did was kind of like the half naked cowgirl and the,
mm-hmm.
I want to say boudoir, but it's not really boudoir. It's like Western boudoir, I guess,
mm-hmm.
but it gives that pinup feel. And I was like, oh, who is this person? Because I love that. And I, you know, have done boudoir photo shoots. I actually worked at strip clubs before. I've been around all of that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool. I thought it was cool as hell, for one, to have somebody bring recognition to this in the Western industry, which can be very small-minded. I even made,
mm-hmm.
I made a post about the whole Beyonce thing, which I love Beyonce's music. But her album didn't sell, so I don't.
No.
I think that award should or was based off of sales, or should have been based off of sales, would have made more sense, but it didn't sell.
Yeah.
So,
well, the Grammys have always been political, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's cool that you bring recognition to that, to such an industry that can be very small-minded, because we can be, you know.
And I it's amazing cool. how many women love it. But I'll tell you, a friend of mine is actually the one who, like, pushed me into it. Like, I have several old pieces that I've done from years ago of stuff, like, and I was showing them to them, and he was like, you need to do more of these. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want, because I've always been real careful about how I try to conduct myself at the booth and you know, being professional.
It can be sketchy.
Yeah, so... and showing, because, you know, a lot of the trainers are male. Good thing about cow horses, most of the women are so secure, it's not even an issue. But I'm still pretty cautious about, because, you know, I'm married and I'm a mom, and I try to, you know, put myself out there in as professional a manner as I can. So when he was like, you need to do this, and I'm like, yeah, well, like, then when I started doing them, they were so well received, and by women as much as men. I think the men are scared sometimes to say much about it, especially with their wives and stuff, especially with me being a woman and doing them. You know, they'll buy a lot of the girls from Teal Blake on the Bucking Horses and stuff, because I did one here a while back that purely on accident looked very, very much like one Teal had done. And I promise you, I had never seen that piece, but the rabbit's feet were even hanging the same. And I was like, I took it down. Did not sell it. And I had people trying to buy it. And I was like, no, they're right. That looks like Teal's piece. And so I took it down, never sold it. It's actually still sitting here at the house, because I didn't want to be accused of knocking him off, because what he does is his own original stuff. And they'll unbiasedly buy from a man. But when a woman starts doing it, then, you know, automatically falls into, and of course I have long hair, so everybody's like, oh, you're painting yourself, because I'm like, I'm not made like those girls. Like, no, and I'm not. So I've tried to do stuff a little different, but they do, they've sold so well, and they're so well received by women, which is really cool, because they see them as powerful women. They don't see them as you know, cowgirl strippers. Like, they see them for what I'm trying to portray, which is really cool that I'm getting that across.
I love it. You have no idea how much I love it. I love it just for the fact that it's like, because, you know, I mean, we live in a world where humans are very quick to judge. Trust me, it happens. We all do it. I've done it. Everybody does it. You're very quick to judge without actually learning. And, you know, the Western industry can be a little more, I don't want to say religion, but there's a lot more religion that'll kind of restrict people's brains to comprehending other things.
There's a lot more closet drinking and bad behavior.
Yeah, it is. It is. But
not so much the religion as the closet stuff.
Well, I concur with what you're saying, but I think I think it's cool to break that mold, and to see you break that mold in art is even more cool. Do you think that you had such a good response? Because I kind of brought this up in another episode, but I didn't get to talk about it like I wanted to talk about it. Because, you know, when you're a woman in the Western industry, like you and I are and a lot of other women are, you're fully clothed, you work like a man, you have to talk like a man, you have to do a lot of things like a man, and you can lose your sense of femininity.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And do you think that kind of taps into that, and that's why so many women like kind of felt like had such a good response?
You know, I think so, and I think the horse in the Western, our whole agriculture industry, cattle women too, they're a powerful group of people. I mean, you know, we're out and taking care of things that, you know, like case in point, a guy that ropes with my husband was over here the other day roping, and you know, he's not used to people who are true ag women. He team ropes, but he's a contractor, and he dates all these cute little gals around town here that are, you know, are very much the soccer moms, and that in their own right do things that I'm not mentally capable of doing for, you know, the PTA and all the stereotypical stuff.
Yeah,
that I couldn't do. Okay, they my kids' school, when we first moved to this new school, they tried to get me to be on PTA, and I'm like, I promise you don't want me. but I was out there working the arena for them on the tractor, which I was going to work, you know, one of my cow horses too after they got done. But like he absolutely could not believe that I was out there driving a tractor and working the arena. Like, it floored him, and this was like a 50-year-old man. I think, you know. So I think those of us in the ag industry, we recognize powerful women for what they are, and you know, pay a lot of respect to our fellow powerful women. Like, you know, if I see a beautiful woman, I'm quick to tell her she's beautiful, or, you know, I like somebody's hat or their hair, because, like, you know, we all need to build each other up anyway. So it is a cool feeling that women in the ag industry are actually responding to these girls, and yes, they're half naked. I cover up everything. I've had people call me and ask to paint fully nude stuff, and I'm like, no. I actually had one ask me to do it for her son, and I was like, no, that was weird.
Oh, wow.
Very weird. Oh. But I won't do anything where it actually shows, like, you know, the parts you can't show on TV, or you couldn't show on the TV.
Yeah, right.
10 years ago anyway. But yeah,
there's a class about it. Like, that's anything in life that you do. You can, regardless of the actual subject at hand, you can take it one or two ways. You can take it a really unprofessional, unclassy, just kind of way, or you can take it in a very, very classy way, very professional, respectable way. You know, that's anything in life. To me, what you've put out there is obviously very, very, it's very professional. It's not like,
thank you.
It's just not, yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. I keep trying to just, like, see where it's going to go. And it's pretty cool because, like, I said, you know, because, you know, friends are the ones who inspire and push each other. And, you know, to have, you know, my friend, you know, insist, hey, this is going to take off. And, of course, now he pats himself on the back. And I do the same. Like, a girlfriend of mine was getting into photography, and she has a beautiful eye, and she's very, very good at it. You know, she doesn't have to do a lot of editing because her eye's so great, and her images are, you know, spot on just with her taking them, her raw images. And she was going to quit her job, couldn't decide to do course. I'm like, you're great, do it. And now she's, like, killing it. And, you know, we need friends like that. And I actually had her shoot the painting that sold at the NRHA Foundation Gala back in December. She came and did all the photos of me for that I have posted. And, like, she took some of my favorite photos she took. She took a really great shot of my tattoo and my hand while I was painting the painting and the tattoo that's on my hands, actually the first painting I sold for four figures. And it's my favorite piece I've ever done. And it's named after the Foo Fighters song, Learn to Fly. So it kind of ties together really good. And the photo she took of it, it's just the coolest stinking photo because it's just the tattoo, my hand, the paintbrush, and then the painting in the background. And but her eye to have picked that out was, you know, you can't teach that. That's natural intuition. And so when you have friends that see your talents and gifts and push you, like, it's great to have people in your life like that.
I'm just sitting here rolling through all your stuff on your website now, like just kind of looking at everything. It's definitely, obviously you have a distinct style, but it's really cool the different, you still have such a wide range, you know, like we have, you know, the colors.
That's called ADHD.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it works to my advantage sometimes.
I can totally relate because, you know,
multitasking. I think all creatives can, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun to do. I like Rabbit Hole. I really like Rabbit Hole a lot.
That's funny. That was actually done for a customer of mine in Lubbock, Texas. She has this bathroom, or well, her whole house. She has a lot of my pinup stuff. She actually has the first really risque one I did, and I was too scared to post it on Facebook because all it is a really attractive jawline, some really big knockers, and turquoise hanging right between them. And it's like, it's an in-your-face, up-close view of that. You can't even see the girl. And I was really scared to post it online. This is before I actually created the Western Feels pinup line. And she has some of my stuff, and she sent me this picture of her house. And the best thing I can describe is, like, if Dita Von Teese did a house Western, like, it is very burlesque feeling, like, uh-huh. It's so cool. And so I ended up sending her that first piece, Western Feels piece that I did, and I need to go ahead and probably put it online now that these girls have taken off. And she hung it, she sent it all back, and she was like, you know, I need something to go above my bathtub, and, you know, I just kind of, she was talking about that bathtub's my rabbit hole, and I was like, okay, I know what I'm going to do, because I actually like a good cigar and whiskey, so I don't particularly care for a bathtub, but I just kind of combined both of us as personalities and made that piece, and she already, it was already spoken for before it was even finished, and then she was kind enough to let me make prints of it.
Yeah, it's so cool because you know what? You can't go down a rabbit hole in your brain. That's what makes me think about it.
I stay there.
Yeah, like you could. Yeah, trust me, I've been all. There's a lot of rabbit holes around me.
I think anybody who's creative or, you know, has their own business has them for sure.
Yeah, well, that's comforting to know. So let's pull back out of this. I wanted to ask you, what. Did you come to a crossroads that kind of led you to where you are at with your art? Because did you ever have to kind of just stop and think to yourself, okay, this is really good stuff. I need to make a living out of it. Because I think every artist probably comes to that fork in the road where they're like, okay, this is for fun, or can I turn this into something that's going to make me a living?
I mean, honestly, it was a prayer answered. My little girl was starting to get old enough where she's toddling around with me. And the last Girl Fraternity World Championships I went to in Oklahoma City, it was in, I guess, I want to say 16. And my daughter was with me. I was stalled next to a bunch of people. It was very, the Girl Fraternities are not very family oriented. And it was really stressful
really?
Having her there. No, they're, but most of those girls would eat their own young.
I gotta come back to this when you get back.
But you know, I just like, it was so stressful to keep an eye on her. My husband's a firefighter medic, and like, he is incredibly supportive and of all of this, and he's always been a very, very much involved dad. And you know, he makes all her games. He does all the things. He's like the best dad in the world. But, like, when we, you know, the barrel fraternities and he's got to work, we don't have a lot of family that comes along and helps. And it was just stressful. And I didn't like the time away from her. I didn't kind of wanted to get to where we could provide more for her than just what we were making selling horses. And, you know, his firefighter salary is, you know, saving our asses because I'm not making anything, you know, unless I sell a horse. And I just started praying about it. I was actually considering going back to school to be an art teacher, but I was hesitant, not because of the kids. I love kids, but just dealing with all the rest of the stuff teachers go through. We, you know, parents that don't want to be accountable and other teachers. And, you know, I'm not real good in office space because I kind of stay in my own lane, and sometimes that doesn't work well for me. So
I get it.
It's just kind of praying, and it just kept growing, and it just kept growing. And it was like, okay, well, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do, is this art. And this, and it speaks to so many of the trainers and the people who actually compete. And it's just kind of like I said, it's just kind of a prayer answered, because, you know, it was 3 years later, we bought family property and built this facility we have now off of a hay meadow. And just, it just keeps growing, and the opportunities just keep coming. But they're, and it has connected me to so many really cool people. It was last year at the cutting, this woman kept coming to my booth and looking at art, and she couldn't decide what she wanted. And the lady is very different from everybody else at the cutting, but she looked vaguely familiar, but I couldn't place her. Well, she finally comes in the last day, and she's like, she's Eastern European. She's like, I know what I want, or not. And she picks out three pieces and hands me her credit card, and it's supermodel Yolanda Hadid, Bella Hadid's mom. And I looked at my card, and I was like, that's where I know you from, because, you know, she was an icon whenever I was in high school and college and did some modeling. So it was like, oh, wow. And so, like, you know, I don't know her, but she stops by and says hi. And when I see her at trade shows, but, like, you know, and then just getting to meet the different cool people I get to meet, from her to, you know, trainers. There's trainers that don't buy it, but they'll always stop and visit and talk about a certain piece. And it's pretty cool. It's definitely taken me, introduced me to a lot of people. And my daughter gets to see more of the world than I ever dreamed of getting to see whenever I was a kid.
She's obviously gorgeous, but somebody had said something, oh, I don't remember what it was or who it was, but we got to talking about this, how Bella was at a cutting, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And she won what, most beautiful person, like an award, right? She won the award, mm-hmm, for most beautiful model or person or whatever. And this, you actually will still have people sit there and say mean things about her. And it's like,
oh yeah. And she, I have not met her personally, but I've watched her around the trade shows. Like, the kids flock to her, and she is incredibly kind to children. And what she's like outside of that, I don't have a darn clue. But I have watched her squat down and take selfies with little girls that ran up to her fangirling when she didn't have to. And, yeah, you know, I see a lot at the trade shows. And she is by far, from what I've seen as far as the celebrities go, one of the kindest people, at least to kids. And outside of that, I don't know a thing about her other than she's stunning, and she seems to stay in her own lane, and she's always has a smile for the kids and always stops and takes the time just to say something to them, which I think is incredible, because, like, there's some social media influencers in the Western industry that are running around at those cuttings, and, like, my little girl was fangirling one day when she walked by, and she, like, made a point to, like, look the other way and not speak, and my daughter was like, well, of course, my child, her feelings weren't hurt. She was more like, well, that was rude. And, you know, and she's not kind to the kids, and I've seen her around a lot, and for her to, you know, and then you got this multi-million-dollar international supermodel who walks Victoria's Secret runways, and, you know, nobody would be shocked, and she's over here, like, selfieing with little kids that, you know, that's the closest they'll ever get to supermodel or stardom, and I just think that's really, really a neat thing that she does for people. Just, I don't understand the purpose of really mocking anyone anyway, especially when somebody's successful. Yeah. Like when she cut at, they took the cutting horses to Fashion Week at Times Square. I was like, that is so, which I'm a fashion junkie, so I thought that was really incredibly cool. And somebody made the comment about her shirt being,
it was so cool.
I know, somebody made the comment about her shirt being cut too low, and I was like, well, if my rack looked like that, I'd probably walk around with them out all the time too. But
I saw that.
I'm 15 years older than her. Yeah, but just the comments about it, and, like, you know, somebody's like, well, she'll probably won't ever have it unbuttoned that far at a cutting, and I was like, well, she probably won't, but, I mean, crap, that's some extra points. Get it, girl. Like, you know, just I actually made that joke last year. I should have gotten a new cowl, I felt like, and I farted off a call. Like, I was like, how many extra buttons do I have to unbutton to get a new cow horn from the judges when my cow won't go anywhere? And everybody was kind of like, what did you just say? And I was like, it was a joke.
Yeah.
It was a joke, but no, really, what's the answer to that?
Well, I mean, I think women just can be, I've said this worse before, you know, there are very, very few women that can actually be happy for other women. It's like women are worse. It's so funny because you'll sit there and watch women, like, actually just run a man through the mud. I mean, just slit him up one side and down the other. But then turn around and be okay with her friend acting a certain way. And that's probably why I don't have a lot of girlfriends, because, like, I think some women can be worse to other women.
Yeah.
When we
I'm pretty blessed. I've got a great tribe of very confident women that I'm around. And all of us are in, you know, different avenues of life. Some of us are creative. Some of us are businesswomen. Like Kristen York was covered by Corey Cosper's Horse Insurance. Kristen is one of those very powerful, supportive, self-assured friends. And, like, I wasn't going to enter the snaffle bit this year because my colt was very difficult. And she called me and she's like, I want a painting of my horse, but here's the kicker. You can only take that money and enter the snaffle bit with it. Which, I mean, I had the money to enter the snaffle bit, but she was just bullying me into entering the horse show. She's like, other than that, I'm not buying the painting because you've worked really hard and I really believe that your horse can do well. So I think you need to go. And this is how I'm going to make you go. And, you know, I laughed and was like, okay. And she's like, no, I'm serious. And so which I didn't end up having much luck at the snaffle bit itself, but he is a money earner in the cow horse at other shows already. And, you know, it just takes that one friend going, hey, you may have really struggled with this horse, but I see that he's coming around and you need to pay attention. And I'm really lucky to have, like, that whole covered by Corey horse insurance deal is very much a very dynamic group of women. I know most of them, and they're really incredible and very supportive of everybody in this industry. And, you know, same way with cutting up saddle pads. You know, she brought me out to Run for a Million to work together at the booth, and just different, just really blessed that there are, you know, I think in the Western industry, we have a lot more confidence because there's so many of us. I think we're probably more equal to the men than you really are anywhere else in the world when it comes right down to it, because cows and horses equalize everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I couldn't agree 110%. You got to have women like that around you because they're far and few between, because it can get catty. Mm-hmm. And it just, I turned 41. We ain't got time for that no more.
Like, no, I'll be 45 next month. it took me
exactly.
A long time. And I'm still guilty of it. Don't get me wrong. There's times where I will call one of my best friends and be like, so can I be tacky for a minute? Like, just a minute, but I got to have a moment of being tacky. But, you know, I try to keep all of that off of social media for sure, because I just really feel like, you know, I have somebody ask me if I ever have a bad day because I don't post negative things on social media. And I'm like, oh, all the time, but I'm just not going to feed the hyenas with it.
You're right. Absolutely. Anyways, back to your favorite discipline. So you do love doing barrel horses and stuff like that, but you now do cow horse, you know, training, and that's what your husband does full time, correct?
No, my husband's a firefighter medic, and then he starts some colts, and he's a team roper. So he's got no desire other than the rope horse fraternities to be in the show ring. He team ropes, and he's an eight healer, and he got his head card lowered to a 6+, and so he's taking advantage of that while he can until they raise him back up. He hasn't had a good head horse in a long time, so they lowered him a little bit, and now he's got two really, really good ones coming up. And I'm like, you better enter all the 12s you can enter right now, because they're going to raise your number back up on those horses. But
they are, I'm telling you, there's some, like, people really get into the team roping ordeal. I've got a customer of mine. He does construction. We do hats and stuff for him or whatever, and he team ropes, and I swear to God, he's like, every other time I talk to him, I done bought a new horse, or we're going here.
Oh, yeah.
Or we're in Texas right now, or we're, you know.
It's great, though. Like, there's so much money to be won in the team roping that, like, so, like, one of the prospects that we have is also a very nice barrel horse prospect. He's a little bit bronky, so I don't haul him because I just really don't – I don't care to ride those kind anymore.
Yeah.
But he's very, very talented. But the thing about it is, like, there's so much money to be won, especially in the mid to lower numbered team ropings, that it's that they can justify buying these horses. Because like we sold one a couple years ago for 35 to a guy. He went to Wickenburg, Arizona, right before the NFR, like everybody tends to do, to get ready for those World Series ropings out there. And he paid for them in one weekend at those ropings at Rancho Rio out there.
Oh,
and,
wow.
So, like, there's such a market for good, solid head horses and heel horses right now. More head horses, because those are a little harder to make, those really solid ones. But they can win that much on them. I mean, and, you know, it's the same way with the barrel horses. You know, you especially with these high-stakes races coming out, starting to get to where you can even charge even more for these things because you can go pay for them at those high-stakes races. And we're going to get there in the cow horse, but right now they're still very high, and it's really hard to win back what people are paying for them.
I just had a conversation with Tricia. I know you know Tricia. Patricia Lee, Tricia Aldridge, and Rosie Bradley, which is funny because she is barrel/roping, which is always like the kind of couple that you see.
Rosie and I have been best friends since we were like 18. We're really great friends. Yeah, I was actually pulled CR's roan horse the year he made the NFR several times for him from rodeo to rodeo. We're all good buddies.
I barely know any one of them, but Rosie, I'm gonna tell you off the gate, Rosie has been one of the nicest barrel people I have ever met.
Yeah,
she didn't
Rosie's
get
good
eye.
Stuff.
I posted like you know those closet cleanouts that you do or whatever, and she bought like a scent shirt I had laying around or whatever, and somehow I ended up back in her DMs like a month or two ago, and I was like just totally random because she does equine insurance. I've always wanted to talk to one on the podcast. I was like, yo, you want to do an episode or whatever, and she's like, yeah, and I was like, okay, cool, and because I love that. There needs to be more of that in our industry. And she's like, yeah, okay, cool, whatever. And she was like, I do this, this, and this for this person, talking about Trisha. And I was like, who? And she goes, Trisha. And I'm like, then I started, like, my brain started putting, like, 5 and 6 and 8 and 2 together. And I was like, oh, that's Red Hot. You.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. What a small world. She was like, yeah, how about I bring her on? And I'm like, I don't care. I could care less. Do what you want,
Oh, yeah. No, Rosie is great. She's been a great supporter. And like I said, we've been friends since we were all in college together. And, I mean, in our 20s, because she always jokes that CR is very proud I found my husband because he was 100% sure he was not what I was going to end up with.
Well, she was very nice.
No, she's great. They are, like, she's probably one of my oldest friends.
Well, she's very, very nice. Just to treat me the way she treated me as somebody we hardly know each other, and she just didn't even blink an eye. Just like Billy Smith at NRHA. We do like, I buy buckles and sponsorships and stuff for the NRHA or whatever and try to be in, the reigning world. And I asked Christy one day, I was like, yo, do you ever do a podcast? She goes, nope, but Billy will. And I go, who's Billy? And she goes, this is Billy. And he didn't blink an eye to sit there and talk to me for an hour. And I just think there needs to be more of that.
Yeah, she's great. Really cool. She's always down for growing the industry and business and pushing other people for sure. She's definitely one of the good ones.
Yeah, she was very, very nice. Because I've had encounters. They're not. They'll be like, who is this person? And I'm like, sorry. My bad. So what is one thing that you wish the public knew about you?
Gosh, I'm kind of an open book. I mean, just that, like, I'm very much one of those people that truly, like, I want success for everyone. I guess, like the big, going back to talking about, like, the artists and helping fellow artists and stuff, like, anybody ever has a question about how I do things, I'm an open book, like, because I've had other artists, help me in the same way, like, talking about, Buck Taylor, he's a legend, and he took the time that day to, like, he even stopped, like, his flow of fan people he was signing autographs for just to come, go through my portfolio and tell me what he really liked and what he thought was cool, and I try to extend the same thing, like, I'll get messages on, my business page on Facebook. Well, how did you do this? You don't have to tell me if you don't want to. And I don't mind. I truly, truly don't mind, because, you know, there's been instances where there's a gal that does some really great mountain landscape paintings that have this cool sheen to them. And I finally messaged her one day, and I was like, how do you get that iridescent light? I promise I'm not going to copy your art, but there's some things I'd like to do with it, with my art, which coincidentally she followed me and I didn't know it. And she told me it was interference paint, which is made by Golden. And it's metallic, but like it picks up the colors around it. So it creates this really cool misty sheen. And, you know, just little tips like that, that we pass along to each other. So like the biggest thing is, you know, never me, myself and most of the artists I know, don't ever hesitate to be like, hey, how did you do that? Because it's, you know, we all can't grow if we don't pass stuff along to each other.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's several of us who do, and there's several of us that trade art back and forth to each other and just kind of try to push each other. And so, like, you know, you've got to put a question about how something's done. You know, if I can't tell you how to do it, I'll point you to the YouTube tutorial that can, because that's where a lot of my technique came from, was just watching different YouTube videos about watercolor. And then the ink that I use now instead became came from an accident of just having ran out of black watercolor paint. I had some ink there from a calligraphy project I was doing, and so I decided to use it, and I just really liked the way it looked, and now that's primarily what I paint with.
How cool is that? Because you never know what you're going to get.
No, you don't. That's the cool part about it. I get tickled. My daughter's very, very sassy, and she was at school, and whomever was conducting the art class that day told her, you don't paint... you always paint this way with the paintbrushes, with the brush strokes. And she's like, that's not how my mom do it, does it? And whoever it was said, well, is your mom an artist? And she's like, yes.
Yeah.
And then I guess there was another teacher in the room that was like, no, like, that's what her mom does for a living. Like, because art is so, there's 100 ways. It's just like horse training.
Yeah,
100
ways
an
artist.
To get it done. Yeah. Like, yeah, like, oh, no, that is really, truly what my mom does for a living. But, you know, there are so many ways to get it done that it was disappointing that this teacher or whoever was, I don't think it was an actual teacher, it was like somebody volunteering that day, but, you know, so closed-minded, they're like, well, you can't use the paintbrush that way. Well, why the heck not? I mean, same like I had somebody tell me, you can't paint that ink in watercolor on canvas. That's not how it's meant to do. I'm like, well, it looks cool. So why do we got to stick with? Why do we got to stick with what everybody else is doing? Why not be original?
Yeah, because some people like to stay in a box. Like, I actually kind of touched on this with, like, human psychology, which is I love. I don't know if you do or not, but it's like, you know, people, it's comfortable to stay in a box, not only physically, but in your mind. You know, like when people, sometimes when you present people with even, like, if somebody is committed to a certain belief about something or somebody, they will actually just take that to their grave. Even if it means they're wrong, admitting it wrong is like a fight with their ego. Mm-hmm. And it's a book that I've read actually on how to read people. It's a really good book if you ever want to read it. They're actually not even fighting with you. They're fighting with their ego because their ego won't let them admit they're wrong. So kind of like the teacher looking at her going, so what, you know, she's an artist. Like, obviously this woman has a superiority and she, you know, she thinks what she's saying is right, and she can't believe this little kid's going to tell her that she's wrong.
Yeah.
But she actually is wrong. Like, yeah, my mom is an artist. But
yeah, no, as a matter of fact.
And it's just, I see it all the time with people. It's comforting. It's comfortable for them to stay in that kind of box of a mentality and not think outside the box, which is why people that do think outside the box are always black sheep, or they're always labeled this. They're always, you know, they get so much pushback with being outside of the norm, you know, so, but they tend to be successful, obviously. Well, I mean, look at
it is. And I think it's disappointing that, you know, people don't allow themselves to think abstractly. Because, you know, the greatest inventions in the world, you know, from, you know, Einstein to now we've got Elon Musk, are people who are abstract thinkers who think, you know, what can we do, and how can we make this different? And you know, for every success, there's 100 failures, but the people that are willing to keep thinking and taking chances are the ones who end up, you know, changing the world. And we need more of that because, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had to make change for myself because the kid behind the counter couldn't make change without it and their cell phone, and their cell phone was dead, or, you know, different things like that. And it's, you know, it's disappointing, and it's very much something I encourage with my daughter. Like, and she is an abstract thinker, and her teacher, we actually had a long talk last night because we've had some stuff with grades come up, which thankfully they were interim reports, and found out the teachers just didn't have all of their grades in whenever they made this report. So that made me feel better. But we ended up talking about, you know, the how many kids are discouraged from thinking outside the box. And it's not even a small town mentality. It's a small mind mentality. And it seems like people are cultivating that these days. And, you know, so it's something we need to encourage our kids to do is, you know, challenge what's normal, challenge what's acceptable.
That's funny you just brought up Elon Musk, because, like, there are actually people out there that have the audacity to be pissed off that he is finding fraud in our own government, which makes me just think about what you just said. We're all conditioned to go, okay, well, trust them. They're good for you. And, you know, obviously they're not. Obviously we need somebody who's going to go, hey, this is not right.
Like, and they don't challenge their kids to it. And, like, that's just such a – it's a hard thing for me to accept is, you know, why can't we challenge our kids to think differently? And, like, I do love my daughter's very blessed with two teachers who really care, and they are great. And one of her teachers I was talking to last night, he's her math and science teacher. Well, you remember that old adage where they make you show your work all the time in math. I have to know how you arrived at this conclusion. Yeah. Well, he's very much, if they arrive at the right conclusion, I really don't care. And I love that because my daughter can do math in her head. She doesn't want to write it down and write it out. And I was the same way. Like, I could do it. But if you wanted me to put a big equation out there, I'd confuse myself.
Yeah.
And And so, you know, to hear him say, you know, if she's capable of coming up with the right answer and thinking of it in a different way than other people, good for her. And that just, like, that makes me, gives you hope as a parent that your kid's going to learn to not fall in line, so to speak.
Well, yeah, she's being taken care of in the way that she needs to be taken care of while she's not with you. That's
oh, something. Yeah, 100%. Like, he called me immediately whenever I called him, which I did not expect him to do. I was, you know, I figured it would be like a phone call from school tomorrow. And 100% would respect that, but and have no problem with it. But he was like, you know, no, here's – I'm calling you right now so we can discuss this and put your mind at ease. And, you know, what a blessing to have teachers like that for her, because, you know, not all of them are like that. Some of them are there for a paycheck, sadly. And we've been very fortunate.
Well, I do feel like if they paid them more, they might would care more, but it's just like...
I don't disagree with you there.
Well, yeah, Oh, we could get into a whole, like, conversation, even about, just aside from that, because I do see what you're going to say. I do see your point. But even, like, now, like, I have a very unpopular opinion about the school shootings. I wish that they would stop blaming the actual shooter and they would blame the problem, because the problem is not – I don't care what anybody says, and I could, you know, be wrong. But kids just don't wake up and decide to do that on a whim.
Oh,
like,
no.
They just, it's conditioned.
Yeah.
That's
no,
what I think.
100%. No, I don't disagree with you one bit. I think mental illness plays a huge part in it. Uh-huh. I think, like you said, the conditioning, a lot of what, you know, they experience on TV and social media. And, like, we did away with TV pretty early on. You know, it's very hard for me to walk into my living room. Now, I am very... very much equal opportunity, whoever deserves the job in this world. But there was a Black Lives Matter commercial playing on TV, and my child is yelling at the TV, "All lives matter." And I was like, time for Nick Jr. to go away, because I don't want my child learning political views on Nick Jr.
Right.
I don't, you know,
right.
we are very much accepting and loving in this household to all people. And I'm not watching Nick Jr. and letting them explain you know, whether it's LGBT community issues or Black Lives Matter, like that's for me and her to discuss, not a TV with an agenda.
Oh yeah,
so we did away with it early on because, like you said, the conditioning is just very much mind-blowing and very much present in our society because we have so many parents who are not present because of mental illness or whatever the case may be.
Well, yeah, they don't look at the actual problem. Like, you know, I don't know if you saw the whole deal about with Heather Wyatt and her daughter who killed herself and the bullying, like she sued the school system and all this kind of stuff. I really thought that brought a light onto things that aren't, because, you know, even there's a lady in Australia, a mother in Australia, who gave the school system over a year of complaints. They did nothing about a kid that told her kid that she should kill herself, and she went up there and showed her ass, and I don't blame her one bit. Because,
100%.
Like, that's the stuff I'm talking about. They're not looking at the bullies that push these kids over the edge. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't look at the teachers that don't care or the teachers that, and I think that they don't care because they probably should get a little more money. But, you know, they're not looking at the problem. They just go, oh, well, we've got a kid that has issues and has problems that shoot them all up. Okay, well, why did a kid do this?
Yeah.
They don't just wake up one day and go, let me go shoot my school up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still a firm believer in 99% of that starts at home as far as the kids who are the bullies. And I dealt with it. It was 2 years ago, standing in my daughter's old school, a woman was standing in line behind me, and my daughter had expressed a couple of different times that her daughter in her class was not the friendliest little girl. And I'm standing there talking to the receptionist, and the woman behind me makes a comment. I mean, she goes, I mean, who really cares? Well, I thought she was on the phone. And, like, we were actually discussing the school deal and why I wasn't able to make it because I had signed up to volunteer. And so I kind of looked at her and smiled and kept talking to the receptionist, and she turned around and she said, she's like, no, seriously, I mean, who really cares? It was like something straight out of high school. And I turned around, I looked at her.
She said that to you?
Yeah, she's talking to me. I mean, we're grown women. And I'm looking at her, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me right now? Like, I'm sorry, how old are we? Like, I just went straight back to 1994 with this. Like, what are you doing here? And so
good for you.
I didn't say anything to her. I just kind of looked at her funny, and I cut my conversation off with the receptionist. Well, the next day, the receptionist is like, you and her had issues? I was like, I've never met her in my life. I mean, I've seen her around. But after having listened to what my child had said about how her daughter behaves towards the other little girls in the class, I could see very much where it came from. Because you can tell she's an insecure person. And, you know, what her insecurities are, I couldn't tell you. But it was really very disappointing. And I think the teachers have to deal with so much of that because, you know, little girls learn from their moms, little boys learn from their moms and dads. And you know, I think there is definitely a strong disconnect of parents and society right now for whatever reason. And it's definitely hurting our youth.
Yeah, it is. Because the woman I told you in Australia that went up to the school and finally took matters into her own hands. Because here's the thing, you know, if you don't take the proper steps, I get it. You would be out of line. But if you took the proper steps and gave somebody ample time to correct themselves and they didn't, well, then all fair's in love and war. I'm sorry. Like, she had every right to do that. You're going to tell my daughter to kill herself and nobody's going to do anything about it. Okay, well, what do you expect to happen at this point?
Yeah.
But they pushed her. They pushed her.
I hadn't heard about that. So did she go to the school and, send it to me?
I will, but she ended up apologizing for herself, and I thought, no, that's not right. You should not be apologizing. This lady should not be apologizing for taking up for her daughter.
that's a mother's job is to hold your child accountable and still have their back at the same time.
But I'm just agreeing with what you're saying. That's a disconnect. You've got people out there who actually thought this lady was wrong for doing what she was doing, and you're like, what?
It's kind of like that TikTok of all the moms that they're like, would you kill for your child? And she's like, they're all like, and I'm like, how is that even a question you have to think about? Like, abso-frickin-lutely. I might feel for somebody else's too. Yeah, like when it comes to kids, I'm in. But
or my horse.
Yeah, exactly. I watched that TikTok several times, and I was like, "That's just mind blowing that there's even anybody who would say no to that." Like, damn right I would.